Right. We're in the forward again. Paper zero. Section four. Old single column, page six. Kind of an interesting thing to note before we jump in here. We so often are referring to the paper deity and reality, you know, where the two words are in that order, deity and reality. You know, just notice that they construct the foreword in the same fashion. They started with deity, and we literally had section one was deity and divinity, and then we had God, personalized deity, and then we had the first source and center, and you know, we're transitioning over now to the rest of the picture. You see the title of this section is Universe Reality. So they're definitely just in the way they're structuring it. See, they're wanting you to think about it in that order. Even right here in the foreword, it's not just, you know, for the advanced student when he gets the deity and reality paper. You know, it's right here too. So that's why it's so important to do, you know, what we started doing the last few weeks of beginning to try to think, you know, and I stress the word try. We're all trying to challenge ourselves to think in a much bigger deity picture, so that there's enough complexity to the source of reality that you can, you know, when you go to talk about reality, you can understand its complexity, because everything has to have a source. Okay? You know, and back when mankind had a very, very tiny concept of reality, you only needed a very tiny concept of God to be the source for that reality. With the advent of the scientific age, you know, in particular, mankind has begun to recognize that even the reality that we can begin to get our hands on, you know, even if you're an individual that's dismissing everything except matter, I mean, just focusing on the matter, you're discovering immense amounts of complexity. Reality is very, very complex. And so that can't come from some simplistic, magical little deity notion. There has to be a complexity behind that. So you know, that's what we're doing. We're transitioning now in these next sections are more focused on the reality side of the deity and reality picture. One of the things, just as a little hearkening back to last week, if you glance at the beginning of the section, you know, you can see these three points, and they're alluding to the three absolutes: the unqualified absolute, the deity absolute, the universal absolute. And I mentioned last week, as we were reading there, that they threw in this proper name in two of those paragraphs that they don't invoke anywhere else in the book. And we were beginning to talk about, well, what were they alluding to there? That expression of total deity, where, you know, they literally mean capital T to that total. They're using it as a proper name for something. And when you first saw it, it seemed like it was referring to the deity absolute. And that's a completely valid initial evolutional engagement of that. But all it takes is a little bit of reflection. And I just wanted to emphasize this, a simple little thing. You know, it's like, well, if you assume that it literally is just a synonym for the deity absolute, well, okay, the title is total deity. You could bring up a lot of points of contrast. Just pick one, like, there's these three absolutes. You know, the unqualified absolute is a non-deity absolute. But the universal absolute is a deity absolute. If the expression total deity referred to just the deity absolute, well, I can think of part of the totality of deity that then wouldn't be under that banner. You know, the universal absolute is deity, is a deity absolute. So if I have this expression total deity, it would have to at least be those two things. It's those sorts of simple little logical points that even a fairly new reader could go, well, wait a minute, maybe that initial thought I had of thinking that was just a synonym to break the redundancy of saying deity absolute over and over again, maybe that's not quite right now I think about it, because, you know, there's a lot of things that are deity besides the deity absolute, and this says total deity. So, okay, so that's, it's, you know, and it's only when you start to really use all of the various proper designations that they have in the book with greater precision that you come to recognize that there's a particular aspect of the conceptualization of everything that could use a name. It's very related to the deity absolute and the three absolutes, but it's antecedent to it. You know, it's sort of the it's what the deity absolute is the residual core of, you know, after you have three, and that thing is what they're referring to there. So, you know, you can think of that total deity, and you can think about the dynamic infinity of that total deity is what we call the deity absolute. But anyway, that I just wanted to bring that up because it occurred to me over the last week that it's a simple little example where just a little bit of logical, using your logical acumen, using that first cosmic intuition, you know, should stop you from running very far with that. It's like, wait a minute, the word is total. I know what the word total means. It doesn't mean partial. It means total. So I can't, you know, if I assume it's partial, which I you know, you recognize you obviously are, if you think it's just a deity absolute, that doesn't jive. That's illogical. And so you pull back on the reins. You say, wait a minute, that initial assumption is obviously not valid. I need to try a different initial assumption. So you're using that basic approach of, well, I start with the best assumption I can think of at the moment, but I'm going to try to refute that. I'm going to try to challenge it. You know, and if I, it's like, well, wait a minute, I can immediately refute that. Okay, back up, bad initial assumption. You know, try again. Okay, so who'd like to get us going on reality here? Okay.
Universe reality. Reality differentially actualizes on diverse universe levels. Reality originates in and by the infinite volition of the Universal Father and is realizable in three primal phases on many different levels of universe actualization.
Okay, so before you jump in, just want to notice a couple things. That last little bit about it's realizable in three primal phases is very much tied to, you know, we initially were pointing out that we can think of the three absolute as three reservoirs out of which we're going to actualize reality, and that's certainly valid way to think about them. It's not everything that they are, but that's a valid an initial approach, an individuality viewpoint approach. But the one little thing, little quiz here. Reality originates in and by the infinite volition of the Universal Father. It's pretty obvious the by. Okay, but why did they say in? Why did they add that? Right, okay, so that's an immediate thought. I mean, you know, he invoked the biblical allusion there, in him we live and move and have our, you know, being.
So we're not only by him, we're in him.
Okay.
It's the context, but it's more her.
Right? All right, there's certainly that, but notice the word. Reality originates. So it's not talking about so much the state now, where you could say that, but it's talking about that whole bit about the origin of reality how it comes to be, how that deity comes to be so that the deity can give rise to reality. And they're pointing out the, you know, the volition of the Father. But how did the volition of the Father come to be? You start with, all together in the I Am, a couple things have to happen before He is separated, you know, before He is freed Himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity and could be this external initiator so that it happens by His volition. You know, before He's separate and there's a by, He's within, okay? And there's self-willed and self-personalized. Now, you've got those first two steps as the first source, as the infinite one, that self-willed deity. It's within the totality of reality that you have the first step happening. You know, it's self-willed and then it's self-personalized. It separates itself off from that which is going to now be, it's going to respond to that volition, that which acts and that which reacts. Okay, so that's for those who are ready to think about more of the picture. You know, there's a technical point that they're not going to miss. You know, you don't have to pick it up, but it's there. You know,
before by,
there's an in, self-willed and self-personalized deity.
Okay. So the I Am, then, before anything, is the I Am. And then before the universe was even created, before mm-hmm. the stars or anything.
Right.
And then, so it's an energy.
It's not even energy. It's before there's energy. It's before there's anything. It's just, the I Am is just the concept of a starting point. And within that concept of a total starting point, if anything is going to start, logically, within that totality, there must be that which can choose to separate itself. You know, so first, within the context, you say, okay, wait a minute. I'm the self-willed part. I will myself to be separate, you know, from the non-will. And not only that, I will myself to be focused over here, outside of the whole. Remember, the Father is not the whole, nor the individuality of the whole. The Father is that which has separated itself out of the whole. Okay, and so, at that point, He can be the by preposition. But before that, it's in. Okay, there was a whole bunch of hands that went up. Let's start over here.
I was just going to say, it's like the zero on a measure, on a ruler. It's a valid concept, but not a factual reality. It's a point of measurement. It doesn't measure anything, but you know
starting where point.
The first foot begins on the ruler, for example. So, it's a valid concept, but not a factual reality.
Well, yes, it is. I mean, and that's part of, see, you know, the horizon of our immediate conception goes over here as far as the Universal Father, but it's recognizing via the revelation, not by something that, you know, came into any of our heads, but via the revelation we can now recognize that there is a root, you know, a foundation or a foot, if you will, underneath that. Before you can have the Universal Father as the volitional absolute and everything happens by His initiation, He points a finger and something is initiated, you have to liberate the Universal Father from the I Am. And that happens in a process of, of establishing the first center and upon it the first source, and then upon that, you know, the Universal Father. And there's a self-contained deity and a self-willed deity upon which the self-personalized deity, the Universal Father, stands. You know, and he when you're thinking of starting with the I Am, you're kind of in here until you get to here, and then it's by. Now he has officially freed himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity. You don't even, the him pronoun is not even really valid until that point. It's an it becoming a him. But the thing to remember is we're not burning these bridges like we've tried to point out last time. There's an ongoing expression of the singular character of the I am. That's called the infinite. There's an ongoing expression of that self-contained starting point. That's the universal one of infinity. There's an ongoing expression of that self-willed stage. That's the infinite one, or the first source. So even though you initially, in a time viewpoint, think about those as scaffolding steps so you can get to the Father, one of the things the revelators are trying to get us to recognize, to not think so temporally, that there's an ongoing eternalization of those stages, all the way back to that first stage of the I am. What you want or can conceive of as valuable in the notion of the I am, the concept of the I am, is still. It has to be. If it has that which is, has survival value, is never lost. There's a survival value inherent in that singular concept of the I am, that completely undifferentiated singularness of the I am has value. And therefore, there is an ongoing facet of deity called the infinite that expresses that. I am that which exists, period. The infinite. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Is this a prescription? I'm starting to see this as a prescription for an individual, the way the universal Father unfolded from undeified reality, the self-will within. You identify within yourself, what is my true will? What is truly me? And what is just the stuff I'm dealing with?
Right.
And then identify with what is really you, the internal core, and then break yourself from the fetters that's keeping you like drowning in this.
The fetters of your animal origin. Remember how we pointed out back there when we were going through the Supreme Papers, that there was that very wonderful little paragraph that pointed out how you, as an individual, have a whole series of self-attributes, and how each one of those was tied to one of the facets of deity, what you basically can now recognize as the foundation of reality, that total deity picture, and including your life animation ties back to the infinite. Very much, this is what they're trying to get you to recognize. You need to free yourself from the bondage of your mere animal self origin. And you do it exactly the way deity did, because that's the source of everything. You were modeled after that in incredible detail. All those different facets of deity, it's like, well, this is tied to that, and this is tied to this. It's not just some abstract thing. It's like, well, if I want to contemplate infinity and eternity, that stuff is relevant. It's relevant to you, and it's relevant to how you do what you need to do, how civilization does what it needs to do. Civilization needs to be an expression that reflects deified reality, not just undeified reality, which is what we're about to read about. Okay, let's jump into this a little bit and see how they start this up.
One, undeified reality ranges from the energy domains of the non-personal to the reality realms of the non-personalizable values of universal existence, even to the presence of the unqualified absolute.
Okay, so let's try to just do a little bit of going beyond the initial. It's like, well, three things, three absolutes. Okay, next topic. You know, the word, the proper designation, the unqualified absolute, is here where you might expect it, you know, if you've read the book at all. But notice some of the details here. Notice it doesn't just say energy domains that you want to immediately think of the unqualified absolute as being about. You know, where you, as a just a basic reservoir notion, you think of it as a reservoir of material energy. You know, the potential out of which material energy is actualized. It's that. But notice even right here, they're challenging a little bit more. They've got values thrown in there. See, ranges from the energy domains of the non-personal to the reality realms of the non-personalizable values. Well, okay, values, that's in the spirit block here. That's not in the matter block on the chart. When we were talking about deity, one of the things that we noticed that they were alluding to, besides personalizable deity, God, you know, which is personalized as God, we talked about non-personalizable deity. Now, the primary example of that is the Paradise Trinity. Paradise Trinity's deity, it's a deity fact, but it's non-personalizable deity. Notice what they're bringing in here. They're saying, well, okay, you have non-personalizable deity, now more related to reality, just, you know, the basics of reality. You could talk about non-personalizable spirit. I mean, value is a quality of spirit energy. Or more to the point, you have a threefold energy. Okay. And see, just the very fact that if you notice that they're bringing in more than just matter or physical energy or, you know, notions like that here, they're trying to get you to think about value somehow in this context, in spirit, and saying that there's universal expressions of spirit energy that are non-personalizable. You know, your personality, your spirit pattern, you know, is a hand that can grip spirit energy and bring it to a focus, make it your spirit, not just the spirit. But see, they're pointing out that there is some spirit that is not grippable, no matter how powerful the grip, no matter even if you had absolute grip, it would be Teflon. You couldn't crumple it. No matter how much you tried, it is just a non-personalizable value, non-personalizable spirit energy in a universal expression. If I grip a little bit and bring it mine, that's not part of the universal. It's mine now. So they're pointing that out. And this kind of ties to what we were alluding to a little bit with the unqualified absolute, beginning to take a little bit of the eternity viewpoint with the unqualified absolute, where instead of just thinking of you have the deity absolute and the unqualified absolute, and the super additive consequence of the relationship between the two is the universal absolute, you know, that basic time viewpoint, which they're going to bring out some more here, but turning it around and taking the eternity viewpoint, where you take the two deity absolutes, the relationship between the universal absolute and the deity absolute. The super additive consequence of that relationship is the unqualified absolute, where you have to go up. See, and notice that's the way this, see, they're hinting at that subtly in this pair. You know, because you can see they're alluding to a vertical order here, you know, from energy, it sounds down the bottom, going up, even to, see, they're going up even higher. The unqualified absolute. The only way that you can understand the unqualified absolute is something that's going to transcend material and spirit energy is when you think about it from the eternity viewpoint, where it's the super, it's the going up consequence, you know, of the relationship. So just notice how they don't force you to have to wrap your mind around that. They carefully construct the paragraph so that You can pass through it with an initial concept of, okay, energy, unqualified, okay, I got that relationship, and you can go to the next. But if you look at it closely, see, it's got a whole bunch of further characteristics, you know, woven in there that you can notice.
Just to be clear, mm-hmm. the infinite, universe, center, Trinity, absoluteness, and the paradise self. So that when the first center comes, then he creates paradise right then because he has to have a place to stand before even the before anything.
Yeah, there has to be a literal expression of that center point. The center point made substance.
Because he can't just be in the air, so right. he has to have somewhat.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember last time that we noticed that they were emphasizing, before they were talking about the source aspect, they wanted to say, well, you have a point to start with. Well, and points just can't be focused nowhere. There has to be a literal place where an absolute focus point can be focused at. There has to be the aisle.
That's why he's a father, not a mother.
Yep.
You know, it may be helpful to jump back to that first paragraph because mm-hmm. at this theoretical point in time, we've got already some complex realities. We've got three primal phases mm-hmm. on many different levels of universe right. actualization.
Yeah.
So,
right. Yeah, and there, you know, and that's what the point of what follows here is we'll see they're going to start to try to get you to think about some of the complexity. And they're going to show you how you have an initial inroad to getting a handle on that complexity. It isn't all just a non sequitur to your previous experience. So we'll talk about that in a second. Here, go to the next one there.
Deified reality embraces all of infinite deity potential, ranging upward through all realms of personality, from the lowest finite to the highest finite. Highest infinite. Yeah. There, that makes better sense. Thus encompassing the domain of all that which is personalizable and more, even to the presence of the deity absolute.
Okay. Now, and again, notice how they're kind of drawing a similar sort of a vertical structure. Personalizable and more. And we were just alluding to the fact, it's like, well, maybe they mean not just personalizable, but super personalizable or even omnipersonalizable. Well, yes, but even more. There's a deity fact that's non-personalizable, the Paradise Trinity. So, you know, it starts to bring in these complications of it's not too simplistic. It's not like, well, I can just put all the energy in this bin and all the spirit in this bin, and it's very simple. And again, the very fact that, you know, even from this time viewpoint, I could bring the unqualified absolute and the deity absolute together in a relationship. It's like, well, how does that work? Isn't it like oil and water? You know, again, notice even to the presence of the deity absolute, so that you can even go beyond personalizable and have somehow a relationship being possible. Just subtly between the lines, here are all those little things that you could, your brain could start, you know, the gears could start turning on and reflecting on. It's like, how does that all hang together? But the one big thing to notice that they're trying to kind of get you started here with this first contrast. You know, they introduced deity, and now they're using that thing they introduced to strike a contrast. Undeified and deified reality. And they're trying to give you a way of starting to think about that. It's like, well, think about the word energy being attached to undeified reality, they're saying. And as you start to try to get your handle on the contrasting thing of deified reality, think about personality. Personality, they're saying, is tied to that. So if we're going to have kind of a twofold thing in play, undeified and deified, that's going to have some sort of a universal ramification. Everything is going to kind of reflect that there's this twofold patterning in play in the universe. That's what's going on right here in our old standby chart. Okay, threefold actuality with unity. Okay, what is the quality of deity? unity. Okay? You have a threefold actuality, and then there's the personality block. So the first question you could ask yourself logically is, okay, what in the source character of reality would cause this to split into two things? These three together is one thing. You know, these three blocks together, matter, mind, spirit, the threefold actuality as being one thing. You know, it's not three actualities. It's a threefold actuality. You know, that's one thing. Contrasted to this personality block, the unity block. Deified and undeified. That twofold forcing, you know, of reality is why there's this non-personal aspect and then this personal aspect to the pattern on this chart. There's a threefold actuality, and then there's the purposing of that threefold actuality. There's undeified reality, and there's deified reality. That, you know, and not to think that just because I have a personality, I'm deity. It's not saying that. But see, they're pointing out that because there is deified and undeified, even down all the way to you, it gives rise to a twofold differential in reality. And the personality that you have goes back to the deified side of the twofold. And the energy that you are goes back to the undeified side of the twofold. Over here first.
And particularly is that true more toward the beginning of creation of everything.
Yep.
And you just first have, you know, praying, everything goes out, and you don't even have any personalities inhabiting, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But as personalities fill up and the supreme starts to extend toward the ultimate beyond, I mean, you know, when you get to the absolute, God the absolute, that's filling in everything. That's filling in undeified reality with deified reality.
Yeah, and that kind of, yeah, we'll talk about here in the next block.
So we're kind of somewhere in between right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so some of that is filled up.
Yeah, hold that thought so you can think in the next block and see what they say about that.
So at the paradise level, the paradise aisle here, then it goes to the deity absolute, which is the infinite potential. So once he's created and he stands, then he makes a potential for deity. And then from there, following the chart, he makes himself the Father and creates the Son, the Spirit, and goes on to the all light absolute. That's how you meant that?
And just notice how we're right here, we're trying to, you know, the name, the other name, you know, the unity name for the deity absolute, like you're saying, is the infinite potential. Notice it's the infinite potential, not just the deity potential. A simple example of part of reality that's not deity is my personality, but it has its roots in the fact of deity. Okay, so you see, just notice what you're actually starting to see is that you can think of, you can better understand why they call that the infinite potential. It's the potential in a much more universal sense than you initially think of it as just being the reservoir for spirit substance. Because deity is behind all of reality. See, there's a measure of greater understanding to reflect on how the deity absolute is behind all of reality. Obviously, it's most immediately behind deified reality. But in an eternity viewpoint, instead of just a temporal one, it's behind everything. All is said and done, the deity and the non-deity are connected back together again, and there is no differential, just like there isn't in the eyes of the Father. The eyes of the Father doesn't distinguish between deified and undeified. He has no twofoldness in his viewpoint. He sees everything as one. Which is pretty hard comprehend. It's like, well, how can you not distinguish between dirt clods and the eternal sun or something? I mean, how do you not distinguish between deified and undeified? You know, between the force charge of space and father fragments. How? Oh, yeah, that's right. In him, they're one ministry. They're one and the same thing. You know, he sees what we see as two faces. You know, the force charge of space and the Father fragments. What we experience as two faces, he sees from the inside as one thing. You know, he can't see the faces. You know? Okay. So there always has to be that sort of, you know, you always have to allow that eternity viewpoint where you can understand it a little bit better by not separating. So trying to see it from within eternity instead of from without and from a time viewpoint.
Interassociated reality. Universe reality is supposedly either deified or undeified, but to sub-deified beings, there exists a vast domain of interassociated reality, potential and actualizing, which is difficult of identification. Much of this coordinate reality is embraced within the realms of the universal absolute.
Okay, so if you just kind of, I mean, without going into, you know, too much detail there, just, you know, reflect on the character of that statement about the universal absolute and how it seems to be invoking a lot more than just the notion of it being the reservoir for mind energy. Yeah, that's a valid thought. But the more you want to really understand the whole picture, the more you'll recognize why they call it the universal absolute. Because so much of what you can begin to understand reality as being is not really a direct actualization out of the deity absolute or the unqualified absolute as reservoirs. We exist in the tension domain between those two. We've pointed to that before. I mean, just notice coincidentally, you know, that your mind, your consciousness is in your mind. It's not in your brain. It's not in the spirit that you're encircuited in. It's in your mind energy. That's where your consciousness is. That's where, you know, the point at which you engage reality. You really can only recognize those endpoints flowing into the relational domain in which you exist. You can't ever really journey all the way to those endpoints. They're inputs into the domain in which you're conscious. The matter is an endpoint that you touch upon. The spirit is an endpoint that you touch upon. The individuality and the unity, but you exist in the relational domain between them, and really that's a universal fact. It's the universal absolute. It's, you know, remember when we first started contemplating the concept of the I am, you know, years and years and years ago. We recognize that the big problem with that initial concept in terms of understanding everything is it's singular. It's just one, you know, the singular fact of the I am. The big thing that's obviously missing is relationship. So is it surprising that we would be having this little, you know, recognition here? That's the whole point, is to bring into existence the relationship, which is not there in that initial concept. So what are you going to experience? Are you going to experience the singularity, of that endpoint? No, you're going to experience the relationship. Everything that you can never really know exists in that relational domain. It's a reflection of the universal absolute, the unfolding of the tension established when the infinite one, that which acts, bifurcated, that which reacts, the infinitude, into the unqualified absolute and the deity absolute. Everything is really in between. Only the infinite hands can actually hold those endpoints. Okay, so I mean, just below deity, like the author of this paper, the Divine Counselor, he's not deity. You and I are not deity. Everything, you know, sub means below. It's just everything below deity. In other words, really all of reality that we're going to have any immediate relationship to. You know, deity reality is not going to be part of our experience. We're not deity. But everything that we do experience came from deity, is a consequence of deity. You know, and so to recognize that logically, even though you can't experience that directly, logically you can recognize that, that reality can't just come out of nowhere. It has to have something that gives rise, there has to be something that gives rise to it. You know? And so that's a little bit more of an understanding of what that distinction is between deity and reality. You know, it has a lot to do with origin and then the literalness of what you engage reality. We're sub-deified, okay. And we'll always be sub-deified. At no point is the finger going to reach in and suddenly deify us. Okay.
Well, when we fuse, then, or when we become finality,
we'll be divine on ever-increasing levels, but never deity.
Mm-hmm. So that's one point we differ from the LDS church.
Notice, you could feel a tension there that needed an appropriate resolution. It was right there, the first section of the foreword. It's like, separate the word deity and the word divinity. What you're looking for, a name for, is most appropriately called divinity. We need something that can give rise to divinity, something that's transcendent of you, no matter how divine you can imagine yourself being in eternity even. That's deity.
Isn't Jesus deity?
Yeah, because he's true God, personalized deity, and they'll make a reference to that. But that's because he was made so. Before he was man, he was deity. Yep.
Without getting too far afield, we can defer this. Mm-hmm. Later, but is this a primal foundation for the Trinity in a way, or are we looking at something completely?
No, I mean, this is the, you know, they're trying to allude to the triodities, you know, the threefold actuality. All I'm trying to do is point out is notice that how non-introductory, if you look closely, this introduction to threefold actuality is, or this source of threefold. There's actually all kinds of stuff for the advanced thinker to reflect on how the threefold actuality goes beyond the first two triodities. It goes beyond something that's pretty simply thought about as matter, mind, spirit, potential, matter, mind, spirit, actual, the first two triodities. There's 18 other triodities that give rise to a greater reality where the distinction is blurred.
Those are absent.
Yeah. Where not only is matter, mind, and spirit blurred together, but actual and potential are blurred together. In other words, it's transfinite because that if I blur those together, I'm no longer, by definition, thinking in finite terms. Those are absentite facts, but they're that's what I'm trying to point out. See, even when they're introducing here, if you look closely, you know, they're saying, well, the unqualified absolute actually has relationships to the deity, and the deity has relationship to unqualified, and then there's that which just gives immediate expression to the fact that it really is all interassociated. Okay, and even notice the terminology. Remember when we talked about the universal absolute from the deity designation is the infinite upholder. And one of the ways they refer to that facet of deity is self-associative. See, so you have, in order to have the potential for an inter-associated reality, there has to be that which is antecedent to that. Self-associated gives rise to that which is associated, just like that which is self-experiential gives rise to that which is experiential. Remember, that was another name for that infinite upholder, self-experiential deity, giving rise to evolutional experiential deity and transcendent experiential deity, and et cetera. Okay. So all these things fit together. They carefully have all these words linked up.
There's only three references to the actual word superattitude in your answer. Mm-hmm. And yet, once you get that idea in your head, as is obvious here on page six, you start looking for the association of two and the tension that creates the third is ubiquitous. And it's highly fundamental and highly important. And it's one thing that people who read it a second or third or fifth time should look for.
Yeah, very key, because, like we said, we want to create relationship. Not the imagination or the illusion of relationship, literal relationship. That means that if you create two things, you don't just have the concept of their relationship. That relationship has to be a literal, above what they were. You know, so that you don't just take the I am and break it into a bunch of parts and then imagine those parts being related. No, literally, once you have two separate parts, they give rise to a third thing that did not exist before you separated the two. And it's above it, super additive. It's not just additive, it's above additive. You're going beyond what you just have additively in the I am. That's the whole point. And if you don't literally think about super additive, then you have no way to have any literal relationship to what we're talking about. It's all just going to be some sort of really complicated concept. Yeah, very, very good point. Yeah, it's very literal. That the super additive word is the key word. Okay, so now here, read this this first paragraph, and then I'll bring up what you were referring to there.
Oh, the next one.
Yeah.
This is the primal concept of original reality. The Father initiates and maintains reality. Primal differentials of reality are the deified and the undeified, the deity absolute and the unqualified absolute. The primal relationship is the tension between them. This father-initiated divinity tension is perfectly resolved by and eternalizes as the universal absolute.
Okay. Now, you know, kind of the basic thing there is just what we talk about all the time, this time viewpoint of the relationship between the deity and the unqualified being the universal. Okay, so that's just straightforward. But notice, you know, ask yourself some more pointed questions of recognition out of that paragraph. Why did they italicize differentials? Why did they italicize relationship?
Well, we've just been talking about that. You know why they italicize relationship. That's the key. And you know that a true differential is key to having a true relationship. But beyond that, a recognition of the italicizing of the word differentials is in what follows. And it ties back to what we noticed about their use, their invoking those 7 points of Charles Hartshorn, you know, and going back and seeing what Charles Hartshorn was wrestling with. You know, he recognized the limitation of thinking in dichotomies. And he was trying to somehow get out, but he really didn't. You know, he was trying to get out of dichotomies, but his thought was so flatlander still that he really couldn't escape. He needed a vertical dimension. Notice there's a whole bunch of pairs of words, and we just went through a pair, deified and undeified. To not think of those any longer, like mankind has always thought about pairs as dichotomies. You know, they're trying to say stop the dichotomies. Recognize that that's a false notion universally. There's one reality. There are no dichotomies. That first source and center, you know, previous section, the first source and center, one first source and center, he's not schizophrenic. He doesn't give rise to dichotomies. Okay? He gives rise to unity, but that unity has to have within it the potential for superadditivity. They're not dichotomies, they're differentials. Okay? They're not something in the absence of something. A something and a nothing. Okay? There is no relationship between a something and a nothing.
If a battery was a dichotomy, you'd never have a current.
Right. Right.
It would just be a...
Because it would still be have just one pole, you know, in actuality.
Yeah.
Right. A something and a not something doesn't create a differential. Okay? So all of these pairs that humans have thought about, some, they're trying to say, stop the dichotomy thing. Recognize that they're differentials. They're batteries that power the actualization of reality, the relationship between those two sides of the differential. And reality is extremely complicated. So there's not just one differential. There's an infinite number of differentials, but let's start by thinking about a few of them here. Let's introduce them in this foreword. That's what he's doing here. And see, it's related to, like you were bringing up, those who, in an Eastern tradition, who haven't had a personal God notion. If you can, they're basically saying to them, if you can challenge yourself to not think of where you are right now in your recognition of reality, the non-personalized side. If you cannot think of those that talk about something called personality as the other side of a dichotomy, what you'll actually make is an amazing discovery that there's actually a road to crossing that gap of understanding where it seems like it's an uncrossable gap. I believe in a non-personal notion of deity, and there's no way for me to get to a personal notion. I'm forever an Eastern religionist, no path to being to those who are Western religionists. Well, stop trying to go across a dichotomy. Recognize that you can go the other way around. The difference between pattern and personality are not as remote as you would think. The relationship between that which is not personal and that which is not as remote as you might think. Because it's not a flat line and it's not a dichotomy. It's a differential. A differential is my fingers are together, now my fingertips are separated. But I have a hand that still is connecting those together. It's still one thing. Okay? There's still unity. But now there's a differential in that unity. I didn't literally rip my hand in half. Okay? I just separated my fingertips. That's what God has done in countless ways. Okay? The unity is still there, but there are differentials that can power reality's actualization. Okay? That's what they're getting at. So now let's think about some of those different differentials. Besides the deified, undeified, which we already noticed, that differential is manifest, and there's a threefold actuality on the one side, and there's the unity on the other side. So that broke this, if you think about nothing on this chart except you start with one block and then you split it into two blocks, deified, undeified, twofold pattern, split that. Yeah. What else do we have here? Let's jump into the first one.
Okay. From the viewpoint of time and space, reality is further divisible as one, actual and potential. Realities existing in fullness of expression in contrast to those which carry undisclosed capacity for growth. The eternal sun is an absolute spiritual actuality. Mortal man is very largely an unrealized spiritual potentiality.
Okay. Now, we've talked a lot about actual and potential. So again, to think about that as a differential, not think about it in such simplistic terms where actuals get used up to, or potentials get used up to make actuals, and then the potentials are gone. But think of it as an ongoing differential, that there's a relationship between potential and actual. It gives rise to something that transcends potentiality and actuality. Okay. For instance, like I was alluding to, one of the places where that comes into play very directly, literally, is those other 18 triodities. Those other 18 triodities have relationships between actual and potential. The first two don't. First two triodities, it's either all actual or all potential. But the other 18 have relationship between actual and potential, giving rise to super additive, super finite, absonite reality, for instance. Now notice one little thing. We're going to realities. Okay, if that wasn't the first word of the sentence, that would be a lowercase r. So you can probably just guess by the fact that it's a plural. Go back to the beginning of the previous one. This is the primal concept of original reality. The Father initiates and maintains capital R reality. Okay. I wanted to get to this. So notice that contrast. Okay. So you know, and it's fine to do this as you're studying. You know, you might miss that the first time, but notice reality the second time and remember, wait a minute, previous time it was singular. Oh, and it was capitalized too. Okay, I need to stop and understand that. Remember we pointed that out. When they capitalize the word reality like that, that's shorthand for infinity hyphen reality, you know, or the totality of reality, lowercase I infinity. Okay, and this is very important. See, you know, how many times have we tried to really stress this now? See, this is the primal concept of original reality. If you're going to put one little notion, a label on the Father is the initiator. Just like they said, the Father initiates. That's what the Father fact is in reality. He's the initiator. And you go, well, wait a minute. He says, and maintains reality. Ah, yes, but it's not a lowercase r reality. Okay, that maintaining, that's upholding. Okay, he's not, you know, and they're very careful. You know, those first two sentences of paper one, you know, it just says, first think of him as a creator, then as a controller. It doesn't say, and lastly, as an upholder, does it? They added an adjective there, because if they didn't, it would be false. And, you know, it would take you off in the wrong way. He's not the upholder in a universal sense. He's the infinite upholder. He maintains, he upholds infinity reality. He's the infinite upholder only. And in that sense, it's really just a repeat. It's still the case that the Father initiates. The infinite upholder, even as lastly an infinite upholder, he's still the initiator. As the infinite upholder, he initiates sub-infinite upholding. That's all he is the initiator, even as the upholder. He's only the infinite upholder. You know, the infinite upholder gives rise to the absolute upholder, which gives rise to the absonite upholder, which gives rise to the finite upholder. He initiated that downreach of upholding, that downreach of maintaining lowercase r reality. It's done on three levels, absolute, absonite, and finite.
What they're describing here and what you try to maintain is that, you know, this other stuff doesn't go away.
Yeah. And think about, now again, the evolutional construct of the book. If you're reading this and all you have is an evolutionary notion of a monotheistic religion, okay, they don't want to shatter that. They want to try to encourage that forward. Again, he didn't use infinity or infinity hyphen reality. That might be too jarring. It's okay, it's just reality, and you don't have to notice it's capital. You can read that. It's like, yeah, I know that. I've professed that in my church for decades. The Father initiates and maintains reality. I believe that. And you go on. You allow that sentence in, and you keep going. But you know, we're trying to go beyond just that initial graciousness of the construct. It's not only gracious, it's also very precise and challenging if you allow it to be. And you ask yourself the question, well, why did they capitalize it there and not in other spots? Okay, it's because technically we're just talking about infinity reality here. But initially you don't have to know that. You don't have to understand that. You can just be reassured that this, you know, this revelation is not going to force you to let go of what you feel a lot of truth relationship to, the notion that God is your father, you know, that he initiated you, and he, you know, he, within him we live and move and have our being. You know, that, you know, we all know that they, you know, they're trying to, you know, when you read the Supreme Papers, they say, well, now technically, okay, I mean, the infinite hands are not holding you, are not immediately in wombing you, you know. You know, that's downstepped, you know. You're immediately, you know, within those holding hands of the Supreme, technically. But, you know, what's, who's the Supreme inside of, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yes. All infinity reality is within his hands, but we're gonna go beyond just that that singular notion. Mm-hmm. When all is said and done, the Father idea is still the highest human concept of God. Why? Again, like I've tried to point out, I mean, most basically, what they're saying right here, because the Father is the initiator. If you're going to initiate your relationship with reality, that's where you need to start. You know, and even more precisely, it says human concept. The word human literally means up out of the humus, up out of the dirt. It's an upward arrow. You know, if you're going to begin to recognize yourself as an upward arrow instead of a little point down on flatland, if you're going to truly see yourself as a human, what the word literally means, an upward arrow, how are you going to initiate that transformation of consciousness that you're not just a fancy animal in a cold, dark, empty universe? Okay? That you're this upward arrow. The Father initiates that recognition. When all is said and done, the Father idea has to be first if you're going to get started. But then once you've let the recognition of the Father initiate your recognition of yourself as an upward arrow, as a human, not just an animal, now take the next step. He, you know, and ask yourself, he initiated me, why? You know, for what? And for where did he initiate me? And then you can begin to fill in the picture. You know, you're not just a strangely upward pointing arrow moving around on a flat surface, you know, for eternity. You actually follow that arrow as an ascending sun. There's actually a place created that you can move into. You know, and there's destiny points. You know, for what? For an ascension. For where? For paradise. You know, et cetera. You can begin to fill in the picture. But if you don't, if you just start with, well, I don't believe, you know, in a father. I just believe, you know, in an all-pervasive spirit. Okay, well, how are you going to get initiated out of that? Well, I guess I could believe I'm self-initiating. Where is that going to take you? That's not going to take you any place you want to go. Yeah. See. Yeah. All right.
I just thought of an analogy. When the shepherd comes to lead them out, you know, and they're following him, then they're going in the direction of where he's been telling them for all that time.
Mm-hmm. You know. Yeah. I mean, and that's
he or she.
You know, of all human knowledge, that which is of greatest value. I mean, you know, when you study the religious life of Jesus and how he lived it, look for the perfect expression of an upward arrow, and then follow it. Follow me. You know, if you can't see him as an upward arrow, you'll never see yourself as an upward arrow. Okay? If you rationalize him as being some sort of a political figure, someone who's as a fact is a sideward, you know, at best a sideways pointed arrow, some activist phenomenon. You know, there's no value there. You know, you've got to see him as an upward arrow, and he will help you see yourself as an upward arrow. Yeah, you know? And that will help you to begin to finally see the Father in a truer fashion as the initiator. And then on it goes from there. Now you're moving. Okay, what else do we have here?
Absolute and sub-absolute. Absolute realities are eternity existences. Sub-absolute realities are projected on two levels. Absonites, realities which are relative with respect to both time and eternity. Finites, realities which are projected in space and are actualized in time.
Okay, so kind of just reminding back to what we've talked about quite a bit. You know, you can notice, oh yeah, there it is, relative. You know, when we remade that list of seven, you know, instead of the word relative, we put in absonite. Yeah. If you hadn't gotten it already, here it is again, a little hint. Connect the word relative to absonite. Now go back, you know, and substitute the word absonite in that list. You know, experience that, the truth of that list. You know, and just maybe just one little thought there. I mean, again, just think about the evolutionary history of mankind. And there's been a lot of this pondering, you know, coming out of the East, for instance. You know, you begin to get the notion of an absolute. And it's like, well, an absolute is absolutely separate from the finite. You know, and I think I'm still going to call myself finite, even though I might have kind of exalted notions of myself. Well, what's the use of finally conceiving of this absolute? It has absolutely no relationship to me, you know, and it all kind of just goes into fuzziness. And again, so, you know, here you're saying, no, it's not a dichotomy. Don't think of it as a dichotomy. You know, and the very fact that you can separate the absolute from the sub-absolute and not create a dichotomy, you know, that there is actually something that bridges that gap, the absonite, you know, or separate the absolute from the finite, you know, the absolute. You know, why could something? Because they're still connected. The finite and the absolute aren't absolutely separated. They're just a differential. They're still connected. Therefore, this connection provides the source of bridging that gap. Yeah. Well, getting at that. Trying to challenge you out of some dichotomy related to absolute contrasted with, you know, with the not. What's next?
Existential and experiential. Paradise deity is existential, but the emerging supreme and ultimate are experiential.
Okay, we talked about that a little bit. Just a simple little point. But in this context, so there's a twofoldness there to reality. And again, just like my personality is tied to the deity, the deified rather than the undeified side. You know, but personality isn't deity. But it still is reflect, you know, the fact that I have an energy on the one hand and a personality on the other hand is related to that twofold, undeified, deified. Is there something on that chart that twofoldness that comes from, that reflects this twofoldness, existential and experiential? Yes, think about your mind. Okay, there's seven adjutants. Okay, and if I start with just two boxes, or one box, and I split it into two boxes from the undeified, deified, well, that puts the seventh adjutant in one box and the other six altogether in one. So I really only have two adjutants, okay, in that you know, thing. Well, what if I impose this twofold pattern on the non-unity part? You know, it should be differentiable still, because it's the non-unity part. So other patterns can be imposed upon it. And it's right there. There's two sets of three. The first three adjutants are tied back to the more directly experiential side. The second three adjutants, 4, 5, and 6, are tied more to the existential side. You know, that's the little annotation I have in here. There's the three in the moment adjutants, and there's the three long term adjutants. You know, where does that differential into? Why do the adjutants split? You know, that sort of energy, real energy part, split in two like that. And then within each of those, you have the threefold expression of matter, mind, and spirit, you know, individuality, associativity, unity. It's because of this very, very primal twofold pattern that's going to sort things into something that's very, very, very locked to time and something that's not so locked to time. something that's more eternity-like, a more long-term expression of the threefoldness, and something that's very, very time-like, very, you know, expression of the threefoldness.
Chris, mm-hmm. Are those the differentials?
Or... Right. So they've touched on two differentials here that give you an understanding of why you end up with seven adjutants. You've got two twofolds and a threefold pattern coming together and producing seven things. Seven is split from the first six, then the first six are split into 1, 2, 3, and 4, 5, 6, and then each of those is split into individuality, associativity, unity, and now you have seven. That's where the seven adjutants come from. See, so understand logically why there's seven. Okay. You know, why isn't there two? Why isn't there three? Why, you know? Because yeah. You have these very primal patterns that are imposed and create that. Yep.
The subsequent, the meanings of many words, and this is certainly one.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to start with existentialism. Yeah. You know, as your mode of understanding what they mean when they use the word existential. You know, that's like the antithesis of what it, yeah.
I don't know who's listening, but just to say with new readers, especially from the foreword, there will be more definition and more concreteness of these terms as we go forward.
Yeah, and again, it's just, you know, just like I've said so many times, don't look to human rationalization schemes for a starting point. Just take it very literally. Existential. In other words, it's directly an expression of existence. It just is. Yeah. You know, if you're gonna, you know, well, I need some word to describe this thing over here. It's like, well, how do I describe it? Well, I mean, it just is. I mean, it's not something that's going anywhere. You know, it just is. The word is existential. Okay. It's just a, you know, to use the AL suffix even is to not add any, not to go beyond the immediacy of it. It's just making an adjective out of that simple verb to be. It just is. It's a direct expression of what is. Okay, so again, so no dichotomy there, a differential. And so you can have super additive consequence of the relationship between that which is existential and that which is experiential. Like, you know, a lot of relationship to, or parallel there to, the relationship between that which is perfect and that which is perfecting, is the super additive consequence of that relationship is that which is perfected. You know, you as a perfecting being go into Havona and come into direct engagement with that which is perfect. There's a relationship there, a true relationship. The two sides of a differential are sparking across the gap. There's a super additive consequence of that. Now, to become a perfected being, you can't just somehow bootstrap yourself up through a whole series of perfectingnesses, and then boom, I am in and of myself now perfect. The only way to become a perfected being is to make this relationship come into, you know, into literal existence. You have to literally go into Havona. You can't become perfected outside of Havona. You have to go into Havona. You have to come into direct relationship with that which is perfect. And then through that relationship, you will become a super additive consequence. You will no longer be perfecting. You will be perfected. You will have transcended perfectingness in the finite sense. Mm-hmm. So again, it's all super additive. All right, how about the fourth one there?
Personal and impersonal. Deity expansion, personality expression, and universe evolution are forever conditioned by the Father's free will act which forever separated the mind, spirit, personal meanings and values of actuality and potentiality centering in the eternal sun from those things which center and inhere in the eternal Isle of Paradise.
Okay, so, I mean, you know, we've already kind of talked about that differential quite a bit already. And, you know, and we often refer to thinking back of the source points, where you create this fundamental parallelism in reality, between, the personal and the impersonal, between the creators and the controllers, et cetera. You know, it's this tied to this fundamental twofoldness, you know, where the absolute on the one side is the eternal sun, and the absolute on the other side is the paradise isle. You know, creating this fundamental parallelism in all of reality. And you know, and you notice how they're bringing up things, meanings, and values there. You know, because we know that. Those first two triodities that give rise to what splits the two adjutants, quote unquote, into two sets of three. You know, those that basic pattern of matter, mind, and spirit, the isle, the third source, the absolute mind. You know, I mean, the absolute matter, the isle, the absolute mind of the conjoint actor, and the absolute spirit of the eternal sun. You know, that's the three absolute actualities that give rise to that threefold pattern. So you notice, just in talking about this, we've sort of, you know, they've touched upon everything that gives rise to the seven. And they're also, maybe just one other little thing to note there, notice how in this initial suggestion that they're giving you here in this little paragraph, they put mind and spirit together and matter separate. There's shades of a number of things there. For instance, like we talk about the unqualified absolute is being a non-deity absolute, whereas the universal and the deity absolutes are deity absolutes. In other words, mind and spirit are together, and you know, matter's separate. There's a differential, you know, when you think about, like here, when you think about the mothers, the cosmic mothers, and the womb that you're in with those various cosmic mothers, you're very much in a mind-spirit womb. She's the local upholder of the harmony in mind and spirit within the local universe. Those two see are linked together. And she's doing that now in this second phase. Before she was a she, back when she was an it as a creative spirit, that was more directly with the material energy. So notice, just in thinking about her evolution, there's matter followed by mind and spirit together. Notice there's a lot of things that you kind of want to have invoked as you're reading things like that. Oh, that reminds me of, and I, you know, get those points connected together. What other things do I know about where mind and spirit are, would be appropriate to hyphenate them like this and connect them together? Mm-hmm. All right. You notice that there's one more little subject to wrap up this section, and that's paradise. Another capital word, they're going to define something. Let's finally kind of bring that to a point.
Okay. Back to relationships. Mm-hmm. They say the primal relationship is the tension between the deity absolute and the unqualified absolute.
And in a time viewpoint, that's, you know, that's that initial bifurcation. So it's the initial relationship, yeah.
And
the primal relationship.
And that goes contrary to our definition of relationships in some ways, which is to seek harmony and no friction, and just to, that's what we think is a good relationship. Whereas I'm seeing the tension here is what creates the true relationship, which would give rise mm-hmm. to that, you know, the super additive aspect. Mm-hmm. Here's what I was wondering. Can you have a super additive aspect from a personal and impersonal, or does it have to be personal and personal?
And again, see, from a dichotomy viewpoint, they're a dichotomy. The impersonal is here and the personal is here, and there couldn't be any super additive consequence. They don't have any relationship. But again, see, they do. They're connected the other way around the ellipse. They can be in relationship. It's going to be a very transcendent relationship in many ways, but it's there. The other point that you're bringing out there about relationship, their attempt to upstep your understanding of what a true relationship is. A differential is not bad. Tension is not bad. The differential is the point. Dead batteries don't power anything. Okay? If you go into a mode as a man and a woman trying to have a relationship, and you say, well, what we're striving for here is somehow to put on thick enough rose-colored glasses that we become one. You know, there's no true relationship potential there. The first thing is to face facts and then adjust them to ideals. It is a fact that there is an eternal differential between a man and a woman that will never disappear, because whose fingers created that differential? The Father. Okay, you're not going to somehow force him to close his fingers. He's going to hold that differential. He initiates, he charges the batteries of the cosmos. And one of those differentials is the differential between a man and a woman. It's divine. Figure out how it's divine. That tension is not to be eliminated. It's to be manifested in truer fashion. Figure out what that differential's for. Don't try to somehow go around it. Or if you come up against it, to go away from it. Ooh, I'm feeling tension here. Let's all run the opposite direction. Let me find a path of least resistance. Let me find people that are not only my same sex, but have a very similar genetic background and everything. So we don't have to, there's no effort required. We can just lay on our backs and be one. It's not what the universe is about. Okay? It's to face that differential. Face the fact of the differential was made for a purpose. Figure out what it is. Effort, struggle, conflict. You know, you come into conflict because you discover that the differential, just, you try to turn this way and it's still there. There is no greener grass, okay? No matter where you turn, the differential will be in front of you. You can't run away from it. You can get the illusion of running away from it in this life, perhaps, but guess what? You wake up on the mansion worlds and it's right there again. They're not going to let you onto Gerasim until you've faced the differential and figured out what it's for. Remember, I mean, it's the man-woman thing of, you know, all the things that you can, there's only one way to get them. There's no sort of secondary way to acquire a true, coming, facing the facts of the true differential between man and woman is one of those very small subset of things that you must confront. It's a primal differential. It powers your eternity. You'll never get to eternity by avoiding that differential. You won't even get to Gerasim. Okay. So that coming to grips with that differential. Letting him be him, and vice versa. Letting her be her. Stop thinking of it in dichotomies. She is not a dichotomy of you, and he's not a dichotomy of you. Both sides. no matter how much it seems that way to start with. But they're trying to say that is a false thought. There is no such thing as a dichotomy. It's a divine differential. God made you annoyingly different, unavoidably different. Why? Because there's a super additive potential there that is essential to infinity. And he's given you the incredible opportunity to be part of the actualization of that super additive consequence. Don't avoid it. Take up the challenge. Figure out how to come into harmony with that. You'll never come into unity in a simple monothetic way. I mean, because he is holding you apart, and he ever will. You can't wish that away. Figure out how to harmonize the two. Yep.
Isn't the personalization of that differential is trinitization, right?
Not always. I mean, you know, you have various triune expressions. You know, just like you have Trinity, you have triunity, you have triodity. It's only Trinity when it's deity. You know, that threefold relationship that gives rise to a super additive consequence, you know, is Trinity, and that's only deity. That's like, for instance, that's why the unqualified absolute, the deity absolute, and the universal absolute are not three elements of a trinity. You know, they give rise to a trinity. Because one of them is not deity. The unqualified absolute is not deity. And even at this point, you know, we have a word to describe that association, triodity. So, but it does make you really curious about, as a finality, I'm a trinitizer. I'm not a triunitizer or a triaditizer. I'm a trinitizer. But I'm not deity. It's similar to what we were just pointing out. I mean, like, they're connecting deified reality with personality. Personality is not deity, but it's tied to that. So, what they're telling you is you have this initial source anchor in deified reality because you're a person. You're going to acquire another fact, another attribute that ties very directly back to deified as opposed to undeified reality. And this ability you'll have is to be a trinitizer. It's not, you know, we've tried to point this out. We now understand what the differential is. What the different, you know, you can't be tying back to the same thing, or I'd get the same thing, you know, in return. I'd get more personality. So I'm not tying back to the Father, because that's the source of my personality. So the deity is not the Father, which gave rise to me as a person. What is going to give rise to me as a trinitizer is the other primal facet of deity, the Mother.
Yeah. But that super additive consequence is a cluster of values, and thus it has a potential for being personalized. And that's what I'm wondering if that is trinitization.
Well, you know, they just alluded to non-personalizable values. And so, you know, it's a little hard to know how to think about this. I mean, I guess maybe I just leave it there. I mean, just leave it at that point of recognizing that reality has a lot of complexities, and I probably should be very cautious about making too many assumptions about what leads to what. Okay, let's just get the paradise part here.
Paradise is a term inclusive of the personal and the non-personal focal absolutes of all phases of universe reality. Paradise, properly qualified, may connote any and all forms of reality, deity, divinity, personality, and energy, spiritual, mental, or material, all share paradise as the place of origin, function, and destiny as regards values, meanings, and factual existence.
Okay, so that first thing under the, you know, defining this word paradise, focal. Notice how they brought the focal, the center. Right, and we basically already said that, you know, in context earlier tonight, recognizing that this paradise thing is about everything has to somehow be focalizable if it's going to be ever be focused. You know, where does that potential of focalizability come from? There has to be something antecedent to any focalization that gives sort of the substrate that allows things to come to a focus relative to that fact. That something has to be very, very fixed. If I'm imagining that I'm gonna try to bring something to a focus, it's like, well, I can only do it on this tabletop here. And as I'm trying to bring things together, someone jerks the tabletop away. Okay, I'm gonna start over again. So if I'm gonna bring something to a focus, especially in some sort of eternal sense, I better have a very, very stable substrate upon which this focalization is gonna occur. Paradise is about that. And before I say any more, read that next paragraph.
Yala paradise. Paradise, not otherwise qualified, is the absolute of the material gravity control of the first source and center. Paradise is motionless, being the only stationary thing in the universe of universes. The Isle of Paradise has a universe location, but no position in space. This eternal isle is the actual source of the physical universes, past, present, and future. The nuclear isle of light is a deity derivative. But it is hardly deity, neither are the material creations a part of deity, they are a consequence.
Okay. I'll deal with the last part of that second. The first part, just tying into what we were just saying. If you want to have a word to tie to the word paradise that helps you to understand why something would have the adjective paradise, like why do they call it the Paradise Trinity? Why did they use the word paradise as an adjective? The fundamental quality represented by that word paradise is stasis. You know, like when you think about it in very literal thing-like terms of, you know, the paradise isle, there's this thing. It's the one thing that's motionless. It's the tabletop that is never in motion, that never moves away. It's a point that everything can be focalized relative to. When you're thinking about those functional levels of total deity, remember what that first level is called. That level is called stasis, static. It's the stasis of deity. In that first level domain, you have the Paradise Isle and the Paradise Trinity. Those words paradise occur in that first level domain because that's the domain of the stasis of deity. That's what the word paradise is invoking. That it's within that motionless stasis domain that you can anchor the Father, for instance. You follow the Father back to his root. The root as the first center is in the stasis of deity. The Father has to be eternally anchored to a fixed point. Okay, so to think about the word paradise in that more generalized sense, don't just equate it to the isle. You know, notice that it's used as an adjective for the Paradise Trinity, for instance. So what's the deal there? The two experiential trinities are dynamic. The Paradise Trinity is static. And you go, well, that's a dichotomy. No. The two dynamic ones can come into relationship with the static one as the trinity of trinities. It's the trinity infinite. To appreciate, you know, you're taking sort of infinite dynamic character in the fullness of those two experiential trinities, and you're bringing it in direct relationship to something that's so static that you really need a special word to describe just how static it is. The word paradise. It's transcendently static, static beyond anything you can comprehend. Coming into direct relationship with that which is dynamic beyond anything that you can comprehend. That big a differential is somehow being bridged. You are really tapping in, you know, to the fact that it's just a differential and not a dichotomy when you're doing that. You're going the other way around the ellipse in a very profound way to bring those two into true relationship. The Isle of Paradise being the way that we can very directly begin to get a grip on this from an individuality viewpoint. That is the absolute of individuality. At the center of infinity, there is a point about which infinity is anchored. The origin of infinity is the Isle. It's no position in space, but it definitely has a position in capital R reality. It's the origin point. It's the center of capital R reality.
How do we understand that?
Nope. The word space there, start with just your understanding of space as, okay, there's the distance between each of us in this room is a measure of space. Or I'm at this location in space and you're at that location in space. And there is no point within that finite space that you're experiencing and talking about there and understanding. Paradise does not exist anywhere in that spatial sense. It's outside of that.
Because it's in all of us?
It's at no one point singly. It's because it's outside. It's actually at all points simultaneously. That's why no matter where an automaton might be in space, if you zoom down and say, well, what's the foundation that automaton is resting on? What's at the center of that automaton? The presence point of the Isle. Because that presence point of the Isle is at every point, an infinite number of points.
Okay? That's what anchors the automaton.
So there's no place that an automaton can go where it isn't, you know, directly centered on a center point of the Isle, because every point in space is a center point of the Isle. Therefore, no matter where I am or what I do, I can always bring things to a focus, because the potential of focalizability is right there waiting for me to do that on its substrate, its motionless eternal substrate. So to think about a difference in your understanding between space and reality. Reality is something much more than just things in a space. We're trying to use this word capital R reality or infinity reality. And there is a center point of that whole infinite concept. And one of the things that's in that is space, for instance. It's in that order. Space is in infinity reality. Infinity reality is not in space. Space is something, is a thing within that totality of reality. It's one of the things in the totality of reality. Okay.
Yep. Let's do the last one here.
Paradise is not a creator. It is a unique controller of many universe activities, far more of a controller than a reactor. Throughout the material universes, paradise influences the reactions and conduct of all beings having to do with force, energy, and power. But paradise itself is unique, exclusive, and isolated in the universes. Paradise represents nothing, and nothing represents paradise. It is neither a force nor a presence. It's just paradise.
You know, and a good part of, you know, now here they're just using the word paradise as a shorthand for the Paradise Isle. And it very much just is, and that, you know, it represents nothing, and nothing represents it, is another way of saying it's absolute. It's an absolute fact, not relative to anything.
Comes before everything.
Yeah, it is. It's the antecedent that must be for there to be the potential for any individualization in reality. Everything is individuated relative to it. Your thought adjuster is an individuation.
Personality?
No, yeah, your personality is an individuation. Everything that you talk about as an individuation is individuated relative to the absolute of individuality. In order for the Father to take that infinite reservoir of the infinite upholder and to individuate out a part of it as a thought adjuster, that act has to happen relative to the aisle, to the absolute of individuality. Maybe we'll just, one more thing for a quick, just visualize that. Visualize that in the infinite eternal ellipse. So here is this reservoir, the infinite upholder, that aspect of the Father that he's going to fragment as a thought adjuster. He has to do that in direct relationship, direct juxtaposition to the Paradise Isle for him to do that. He's not magical. He has to do that in the presence of the Paradise Isle, that individuation. So this has got to touch the Paradise Isle. Well, yeah, you know, like we talked about, yeah, the infinite upholder comes up and touches the first level domain where the Paradise Isle is. It's because that which extended that the infinite upholder, you know, through it, bringing it into contact with the Paradise Isle, that allows the Father to individuate that. And it's just very literally directly there. And that touches that. Therefore, it can be individuated. How about right here? So whoever said the personality, same way. I have the whole reservoir of will. I'm going to individuate out a part of that as my individual personality. The Father's going to do that, okay? Okay, if he's going to do that, he's got to do that in direct, you know, the direct presence of, you know, touching the aisle. Here's the reservoir of will, the infinite one. What's it directly touching? Stasis domain, where the Paradise Isle is. That's why he can individuate that.
Yeah.
Again, some of these things are just sort of basically just immediately visualizable when you lay it out like this. So to go, you know, see, and to go way beyond thinking about the Paradise Isle is just an exaltation of the matter in this couch. Well, if there's this lowly matter, there's got to be higher matter and higher matter, and then there's got to be the highest matter. Yeah, that's part of what the Paradise Isle is.
That's the bottom up.
It's the highest matter. But it's much more than that. It's the absolute of individuality. And even a pure spirit fragment is fragmentizable only relative to it. Again, like notice how we're back to where we started. To not think of the aisle and the pure spirit nature of the thought adjuster as being some sort of dichotomy. No, they have to be intimately in touch, or they couldn't be. Okay. So, and just once you recognize the aisle as the absolute of individuality, now take it back down, so that when I'm talking about matter, like this couch I'm sitting on, you know, or the things in this matter block in threefold actuality, that's the individuality block. The contrast between the things in that matter block and the things in the spirit block, these are going to be individuality-like expressions. But the spirit block, those are going to be unity-like expressions. And how much different that is than just, well, there's matter, and, you know, I don't really care about matter. I like, but you do care about individuality. You know, matter is the means of the expression of individuality. If you didn't have matter in the truer sense of what matter is, you know, the individuality substance, you couldn't be an individuality. You couldn't have been freed from the fetters of being diffused throughout the I am. Because the Isle of Paradise comes into existence, focus points, individuations can come into existence centered upon it. It's the paradise source and center. See? That it's the, you know, the stasis center. Okay. So we'll continue on with that. A couple more things, you know, that really are tied to reality here. These next two sections, continue on next time. We'll probably do both of those sections, I would guess, next time. Slow down. It's crazy talk. Crazy talk. You know, we all know how much we've waded through so far, and they know how much we've waded through if we've been making an earnest effort. So they're going to give us something that we can get our teeth into a little bit better. It's like, well, what about me? Where do I fit into all of this? Now, the next section, is going to give you a little more of, okay, so how am I related to all this stuff that you said? You know, if those of you who remember the forward, you know that's where they... They bring that in. So you missed, let's see, two chunks of infinity. Let's see.
He's trying not to feel so bad. Isn't it also about relating to one of the hardest things for cultures or for individuals is to relate to one another?
And that's one of the things that the revelators are trying to help us here by giving us this much bigger picture. If you're going to bridge the divide between cultures, you need to be able to go around the other side of the ellipse a little bit. You need to be able to see them in a transcendent way. There's no bridging the divide in Flatland. God has created that separation. Okay? If you're going to reach them, you need to reach them above the plane. We know that that's part of the big favorable condition thing that's going on here. Why we're wading through all this, why we're trying to get our capacity expanded so that we can actually have the space in which God can grow us into relationship with our fellow man. Little Flatlanders don't have the potential to relate to their fellow man.
Yeah. So the seventh adjutant dawned on me. It has to dawn first in the collective before we see a harmonization of the different cultures.
Because it's
what we're trying to do right now.
The gateway to bridging the gap. There is no bridging this gap. This is a gap. It's a differential. Okay? But if you can go up and through the individuality of the whole, and the gateway to the individuality of the whole that can connect you with your fellow man is the seventh adjutant. Yes. That's the gateway. That's the neck of the hourglass. That's the door, that, like we talked about.
Quality of thinking.
Yeah, you've got to get up or you can't get across. All right, let's take a little moment here.